Continuing to dive deep into Go, and there are many new packages, which I told you this morning about, if you missed it, watch the video. And one of them was Sync Test. And it looked to me like a very interesting package. And then Rona just spontaneously offered to come back to FOSDEM after 5 years.
No.
Six? When did you last present in my dev room?
Two.
In my dev room?
Yeah.
Okay.
Time flies.
It looks also short. It looks like yesterday. And she was so great with her last talk. Was it about controversial topics about Go? Was it that one?
Go is object-oriented.
Yes, that one. And she was so great that I just invited her back. So a very round of applause for Rona.
Thank you. Hi. So as Marcia said, my name is Rona. And I love introducing myself. I also give Go workshops around various topics. And there's a pipeline usually to my talks, not my workshops, my talks. And it works something like this. So I prepare for a workshop, something happens, and then I give a talk. And yeah, so what I'm trying to say by this is not a promotion to my upcoming workshop, which I'm giving with Jonathan Amsterdam. a member of the Go team. And this is a great opportunity to thank him for helping me put together this talk. It's important to say this because, you know, that would be wrong and super confusing for everyone. But it really is just the backstory of this talk. So not a promotion. So what happened? What happened that I'm giving this talk? Well, I need you to consider these two functions. So we have these two functions. One is do no deadlock. By the way, back row, if you cannot hear me, do something like this. Well, so that means that you cannot hear me because you just did the thing. Interesting, very interesting. Okay. I see you. So I need you to consider these two functions. One is, and Martia, one is do no deadlock. That just logs that do no deadlock was invoked. And one is do deadlock, which logs that it was invoked and deadlocks. It deadlocks because we create a channel and then we try to read from that channel and there are no messages in the channel, so it's just going to block forever, which is fine. Now let's create a test that runs both of these functions in two different Go routines using a wait group. So since do deadlock deadlocks, wait group wait is going to just wait forever. So far, so good. I'm probably not telling you anything that you didn't know already. So we run this test with a timeout, and it will result in something like this. Panic, test timed out after 100 milliseconds. And of course, if we didn't provide a timeout, it would just sync forever, so until terminated. Okay? So let's fix this test by replacing the call from do deadlock. Instead, we're going to call do no deadlock. It's like do no wrong. Yeah? And it runs, and it passes, and everything is good in life. Let's make it more interesting. Let's have do no deadlock start a new Go routine that calls do deadlock. Now I have what's called a Go routine leak. But my test still passes. C'est la vie? Or more generally, like for me, I don't know about your applications, but mine looks something like, you know, like generate a bunch of, you know, Go routines, do some stuff, everything is out of control. I never said I was good at it. They launch a bunch of more Go routines, and all of my tests pass, so I'm like, eh. Anyway, so I spoke to Jonathan and I was like, so what is the right way to teach people? Because I was going to basically teach people how to profile and like detect this stuff. And then he said, Wanna, you watch the sync test talk. Just use sync test. Now, here's the problem with sync test. I cannot pronounce sync test. So we're off for a great start. But anyways, testing slash sync test package was introduced into Go 125 just recently, kind of, sort of. It runs tests inside a bubble, and the bubble has a few features that are pretty, pretty cool. I also live in a bubble, so I know something about that. Basically, the bubble knows about the goroutines that were created within it, which is very useful, because I can do something like this, this very naive thing here, test all goroutines, finish sync test. And I'm just going to create here, like launch here two calls to go do whatever. In this case, do no deadlock, which we know deadlocks in a different goroutine. And there's no wait groups or anything, and it just fails. And it fails immediately. Jonathan had a point. That is the right way to do this. So yeah, I could stop here and basically let you, you know, digest, but there is more to cover. So what do we see here? We see here that even though I didn't use any wait group, I didn't track my Go routines, I mean, I'm just launching like Go, whatever, something just got stuck and didn't return, the bubble knew about it, or when the test function finished, we basically had some form of tracking of what is happening, and the deadlock was detected. We didn't have to wait for a timeout. Unfortunately, by the way, that's not always going to be the case, even with sync test. And everything, you know, failed quite quickly, so they say that time is money. I say they say that time is money because that has not been my experience. So the features of the bubble. So what is this dark magic? Well, the bubble waits for goroutines created inside of it to finish. That's kind of, you know, obvious. Quoting from the docs, test waits for all goroutines in the bubble to exit before resuming. If the goroutines in the bubble become deadlocked, the test fails. Now, there are caveats, though, to this, and we need to learn a new term that's durably blocked. So it's not just blocked, it's durably blocked. And a goroutine is durably blocked when it, and I'm quoting here from the blog post about sync tests, when it can only be unblocked by another goroutine in the bubble. Exactly. The list of durably blocked operations are, or is, a send or receive on a nil channel, a send or received or receive blocked on a channel created within the same bubble, a select statement where every case is durably blocking. So yeah, that's a recursion. I'm testing you. Yes, durably blocked, test case that is durably blocked. There we go. Time sleep, sync condition, wait, and of course, wait group wait. So far, so good. However, there are blocking operations that are not durably blocked. For instance, and a very, very important one is the I/O. So I'm going to quote Damien Neal's talk about this. Now, he is the one who is responsible for all of this magic, so he should know. So basically not durably blocked are channels that are created outside the bubble, that makes sense. I/O, syscall, cgo, and pretty much anything that is not go. And unfortunately also mutexes, which is kind of, to be honest, bless you. Mutexes, which is kind of, bless you. which is, this was heartfelt. Like, I see, I also have allergies. And it's winter. So it's a bit disappointing, really. Like, the thing about the mutex is there is an explanation why it didn't go in. Essentially, like, it was hard to not hurt the performances of mutexes that are supposed to be quite fast to do this. So unfortunately for now, mutexes are not durably blocking, and that's kind of important, and I'll show you in a second what that means. So, for example, okay, let's talk about IO first. So, for example, we have this example of a test of go, listen, and serve, whatever. Yes, I didn't check my errors, I know. I told you, not very good at this. Anyways, so I create a goroutine that waits for some IO. The bubble can't know if IO is coming or not, cannot really fail this test. That makes sense. You know, you're going to have to provide a timeout, essentially, to kill this test. So in this particular case, it is not very useful. That being said, if you have a server and you have, you know, and you're testing graceful shutdown, it is amazing. So we still need a timeout. Now let's talk about mutexes, because that is kind of painful, to be honest. So I created here a function called do deadlock with mutex. Guys in the back still can hear me, right? Well, now they're not doing the things. I don't know. I basically try to lock a mutex twice. Obviously, the second time is just not, it's just going to hang forever or until terminated. So I try to run this within a test, and it's just going to hang, and it needs a timeout. So far, so good or bad. You decide. So just always run a sync test with a timeout. I mean, technically, like, always run tests for concurrent code with timeouts. Which just makes sense to be safe, you know. Now, sync test also comes with, I said it correctly, yay, with a wait function. And the way that Damien explains it, it's kind of like running runtime go sced in a for loop until kind of like can't make any progress anymore. So it's yielding back the CPU, like, you know, over and over and over again until everything is kind of run. And the way that the documentation explains it is wait blocks until every go routine within the current bubble other than the current go routine is durably blocked, which we already covered the definition of durably blocked. Super easy stuff. So consider this example. We start a go routine with a worker that iterates over a channel. The channel has a buffer for one message. So writing to it once is not blocking. I have a variable process, which is an integer, and on every read from the channel, we place the read integer in inside process. So essentially, we read from the channel, we put it in process. We write 42 to the channel and would like to see that processed is set to 42 or fail the test. However, since the channel has a buffer, there is no guarantee that what we wrote to the channel has already been read. That would be an unbuffered channel. So we need to sync here something. Well, sync test waits for the rescue. That's what it does here. Without it, you're going to have a race. And also, so this test is flaky in the flaky sense that 99% of the time it will fail and sometimes succeed, not the other way around. Not like most of your CI. If we run it, this is what it's going to look like. Okay, impressive stuff. So that's synced wait. But that's not all. Sync test comes with time travel. You can travel back. So who here has been born after January 1st, 2000? Yeah, so welcome to the year 2000. This is going to be first time for you. The rest of us, yay! Okay. Every bubble starts with a start time of January 1st, like midnight, midnight UTC, January 1st, 2000, Y2K. Welcome to Y2K. If you're older, obviously, welcome back. In this code, I start a sync test, and I log the time, and then in a loop, I sleep for a second, and I log the time. Do this three times. And this is what the result would look like. So this is kind of fun. So first, you will notice that this test did not take three seconds to execute. That is because time has a fake clock inside the bubble. Yeah. And you will notice also that the time is Y2K. Now, this I really appreciate. This is excellent trolling. Hear me out. I don't know why they selected this date, but I do know that forensic anthropologists of the future are going to look at this material and say, well, they knew about time travel, but they didn't think that they could go back farther than 2000. Brilliant stuff. Brilliant. Anyways, so more about stuff that you can do with time manipulation. So here is some time-sensitive functionality. I created a function retry. It takes a function that returns an error. It also takes how many times you're supposed to retry this thing, and an interval, like how long you're going to wait between those retries. And it's kind of like what you would expect for a range n. If there was an error, sleep, and then, you know, do it again, and times, blah, blah. You can read code. I know you can. Finally, if we never succeed, we return an error. Now, our test calls retry with n equals 3 and wait time between retries of 10 seconds because, who knows, maybe, you know, this function that we're calling here particularly, it just returns errors new, but maybe we're just calling an external resource, and that's, you know, we don't want to bombard it. So you're not going to wait 30 seconds for this to return, but here it's kind of fun. It's not going to take 30 seconds to run a test. Now, sorry. First and foremost, a test retry without sync test is going to look something like this. So create a function, 10 seconds, retry, time sleep, 30 seconds. We have some channel here that we close for signaling to know that, you know, retry is actually finished, and so on and so forth. And then with sync test, and it takes 30 seconds, as you can see, which is, I was sitting a while in front of the computer. I didn't just write this number there, I swear. So with sync test, it looks like this. So you will notice that it's shorter. We use sync test wait for the syncing to prevent the race. We just sleep 30 seconds, which is a fake 30 seconds again. At the end of the 30 seconds, so like in the meantime, the time sleep for 10 seconds that happened three times was actually invoked. All of this was done for you. We just ran it. And yeah, this is how long it actually took. So 300 milliseconds. This is quite nice. Here are the stuff that I was able to test with all of this. I was able to test graceful shutdowns. I was able to test a cache with TTL, so time to live, with like entries that expire. And then I looked at that and I was like, okay, I wanted to make it a little bit more complex. So I created a server that handles session, and those sessions have timeouts. And then I created a recording that maintains the timestamps of those requests that are made to the server. So I have requests to the server and their timestamps, and then I sleep between them. And therefore, when I run this recording, I don't run out of memory, which is quite cool. Also, so Damien actually said in his talk that time only moves forward. Now, I'm going to show you in a second that he actually built a time machine where you can have time going backwards, but not farther than 2000. So something that I spent a while thinking about was like, is there a reason why I would use two bubbles, like essentially, and reset the time, and what I figured out was, oh sure, we have these services that communicate with each other, maybe their clocks aren't synced. So you can actually simulate time going backwards, forwards, whatever you need to within a test. Just, you know, test your protocols, etc. So that's pretty cool. And those are just, you know, these fun examples that I came up with. You probably have your own ideas of what you can do with this. Thank you very much. And now I will finish with a demo of time going backwards. Well, I would finish with a demo if I could move this here. I don't know where I'm going. Is this not the... Where is the other screen? Do you guys see anything? Okay. One day I'll get there. There we go. Look at time going backwards. With the time now. Thank you very, very much. You were great.